So I'm Mark Durham. I'm a member of the class, and I'm a volunteer apologist for Reasons to Believe. And sometimes I'm fortunate enough when Hugh's away, I get to talk in here. So today we're going to talk about, you ready? Testing. 1, 2, 3. In the beginning was the Word. Okay. All right. So today we're going to talk about hominids and people. And yeah, if someone could get the lights a little bit. I got a series of slides. Probably only get halfway through today. We'll talk about the more primitive hominids. And you should have gotten one of these sheets here. Everybody get that? And on the back is a vocabulary list. So if I use a term, quickly look on there to see if you can figure out what I'm talking about. They're in alphabetical order. And if not, just let me know and I'll try to explain something. I've given a few talks in here on hominids, but of course there's a lot of new information. And my PowerPoint's acting up here, so things should be feeding in nicely, and they're not. But, okay. There's a little blurb for Reasons to Believe and Reasons Institute, you see on there, is one of the educational sources Reasons has. And there's a course called One Human from Institute. It's called Human Origins. And so have any of you taken that? Nobody? Just me? Well, that's one of the reasons I'm interested in these primitive looking humans that are, for the most part, walk upright. They're bipedal, or bipedal, as the archaeologists would say. And they're truly bipedal, not like apes that are knuckle walkers. So those are the things we're going to talk about for today, and maybe one more time. So we'll get through, the more primitive ones today, the Australopithecines, maybe a few Homo species, and then we'll go into some others. So if you have a question, make sure you speak up. I have a little trouble hearing. Forgot my aids. And okay, and that handout should have this taxonomy chart on it. That's sort of a taxonomy tree of some of the hominids. And take a look at that. Should have it in your hand there. And on the left side is... on your left side, you can see there's a time scale. I'm going to go right over here with this, see if this works. Yeah. See the time scale at the top here? Those are millions of years. And then if you, pick a certain hominid, say this one here, Australopithecus afarensis, you go straight up from there and you'll see that straight up from the head of the individual. According to that, from this red line right here, you would go up. So it goes back to close to 4.5 million years. That's how you read that. Can you guys see that over here? And then this other scale here is just to give you a more general time scale. This is back here. You see the age of dinosaurs. I'm talking about the green side here on the right part. One second. And it's you'll see that when we first find hominids in the fossil record up here about 6-7 million years ago. But if you go all the way back through the age of mammals, 65 million years ago, you get into the age of dinosaurs. What happened 65 million years ago? What ended that period?
An
asteroid or comet hit off of the Yucatan Peninsula. And rained fire all over the earth, and we went into a far greater nuclear winter than anything you can imagine. 70% of species were exterminated. But anyway, you have to come along. There were primates, monkeys and apes, that existed during this period. But it wasn't until we get way up here in this red zone. Okay. That red zone up there, about 7 million years ago, that we find bipedal or bipedal primates, the ones that walk on two legs. So that would not be like a chimp or a orangutan or a gorilla or gibbon. Those apes do not walk on two legs. They're knuckle walkers. They bend over and walk that way. So that's the time scale, time tree. Here's another one. Sort of just flared the opposite direction. It's a little bit fuzzy, but same thing. Okay, we'll start. I'm not going to do things necessarily in order, but this is the chronologically, this was one of the first hominids ever found, Homo neanderthalensis. And the first one found, La Chapelle, Saint, 1856. It was old and arthritic, which misled how the species was viewed. People thought that Neanderthals were like real hunched over and diseased, or diseased looking. They thought that was the natural state of them. Features included heavy brow ridges, low slanting forehead, low rear projecting skull. We have a Neanderthal skull up here. We'll look at it maybe a little later. But what else? Large eye sockets, very large nasal fossa. That's the opening for the nose. Narrow projecting face. And that's just the skull. The features of the body were, in this case, the individual was very old. And so a lot of the bones were kind of bent and distorted. Yeah, Dave.
This one also didn't have the tear duct opening?
I'm not sure if that was this one, yeah. It was discovered in Neander Valley, Germany. And brain size larger than a human. Hmm. What does that mean? Were they smarter than us? Okay, I'm going to hold the skull up here for a second. Somebody turn one light on if you could.
Is it a real one?
Yeah, well, this is a replica of the real one.
Okay.
And the jaw is not connected, the lower jaw. But, Steve, I'll try to find it a little bit. Valerie, can you hold the real skull, the human skull? I have a real human skull here. And this is a replica, though, the Neanderthal. I don't have any hominids that are real. Okay, you can't get those. There's like, you know, very rare. Okay, just let's stand in the middle here, Barry. And we'll get back to Neanderthal later in the talk, but try to compare the differences here. You know, here, this way. And see, what stands out immediately? Large brow ridges, huh? The face pokes out, you know, unlike the human. Look at the teeth, huge teeth. And a narrow face. Look at the nasal opening, nasal fossa. Twice or three times as big as human. And that has to do with the cold weather that they lived in. And eye sockets, huge eye sockets. And there's a lot of other things. But look at the skull, the top of the head. And compare it to the human. The human, the top of the skull here, you got the parietal, or frontal parietal, and I forget what the other bone is, but occipital. It's very low and flat. And there's this bun in the back. See back here that the human doesn't have? So the human brain up here, the bones are much rounder. And there's much more of the cerebral cortex, more matter up there. So that's just one feature. There's a lot of other minor features.
Have any in terms of brain parts, neurons, been found in some way preserved, like things get preserved in amber? I don't,
Yeah, or frozen, you know, like the woolly mammoth. No, haven't found any Neanderthals with the flesh on them. Never. That would be really great if they could.
They have gotten DNA from bone marrow.
They've gotten DNA, yeah, right out of the teeth and the bone marrow, but which is great. You know, you can check the genetics of it. Genetics are different enough from us where they are definitely a different species. Yeah, I mean, who knows? Maybe someday they'll find one in the moss? What's that moss? That stuff in
Pete, the peat man.
You've seen that guy? There's several individuals they pulled out of there. Well, you know, maybe there's a Neanderthal in that too. I doubt that there's any up in Arctic frozen zones, though. I don't think we'll ever find that. Okay. Yeah. This is very narrow. Look at the facial bones right here. They slant way back, whereas on a human, they come out. So our faces are wider. So that's just another difference. And these zygomatic arches, see these, you know, our cheekbones right here? Look how flat they are on this. See that? These little side bones here. You know, it's that bone that's easily broken if something hits you in the face. Well, the human one is... flares out more. So just for some reason, their faces are very narrow and long. Okay. So I just wanted to show you that because that's one of the first ones, but it was thrown aside, ignored for a long time. And here's the reason. Oh, Neanderthals have been around since 250,000 years to about 40,000 years ago. Their DNA is available. It's indicating they are not our species. Piltdown. A guy named Charles Dawson, not Darwin. Okay. He was a lawyer who wanted to be a famous anthropologist. Never made it. Well, he did for a while. He put this phony fossil together, this head, in England. Fooled scientists for 40 years. It's part of orangutan and several human bones put together as a skull. It even had a... It was in 1912. It even had a name. Eoanthropus Dawsonii. Quite an ego, he even named it after himself. exposed in 1953 as a forgery.
How did they catch him, Mark?
Enough guys finally sat down and looked at it and said, wait, look at these are file marks all over here. This thing isn't real. And wait a minute, I recognize those teeth. Those are orangutans. So several people finally looked at it instead of just assuming it was correct. Yeah. So, but there's hope. What it did during that 40 years, it threw the field of physical anthropology way off.
Oh, yes.
It fooled everybody, and they wouldn't believe the fossils that were being dug out of the ground. They said, no, these are just apes, you know, and they weren't. So this thing really threw things off. And here's one of the ones that got thrown off. A very famous... anthropologist Raymond Dart found this tong baby. Turns out it was 3 or 4 years old, and it's the species Australopithecus africanus lived. Well, it was found in 1924. It's called. Its name means southern ape from Africa. 3 to 4 years old. For Raymond Magnan indicates. Bipedalism. What is a foramen magnum? Let me get the human. This one's easier to hold because I got it hooked on with springs. But see this big hole in the bottom of the skull here?
Yeah.
Foramen magnum. That's where your spinal cord goes into your brain. Well, you notice on humans it's located almost parallel to the base of the skull. Meaning the backbone comes straight up to it. Whereas on a four-legged animal, it would come out back here, this way. So this little Tong child had the foramen magnum right there, just like us. What does that mean? Yeah. Here's an adult. Valerie's right. Thank you, Valerie. This is Africanus, Australopithecus Africanus. Can you see the foramen magnum? Yeah, right there. Wasn't a very big, it was only like 4 feet tall. Yeah, John? Well, that's Lucy came a little after that. Yeah.
There used to be a raging debate as to whether Australopithecines were bipedal or not.
Right.
Like Oxford, one of the top experts in the world, and another fellow expert denied they were bipedal. So are you saying now that that has finally come to a conclusion that
yes,
they were wrong and it is bipedal?
Yeah, you know, whatever hypothesis you come up with, there's always an opposing side, and which is good in science. You know, there should have been an opposing side to pilt down. There wasn't, and look what happened. 40 years of misinformation. So what John's saying is for this Australopithecine, there was some big arguments going on. We don't think it was bipedal. It was probably a knuckle walker, like a gorilla. So now we have so much evidence. We found so many more of these fossils. Instead of only being able to fill up a couple tables, we can fill up four or five tables now of fossils. And so not only is the Australopithecines, these are the oldest ones, the 3, 4, 5 million-year-old fossils, they're not only bipedal, but they're obligate bipedal. Is that on your list?
Obligate.
Turn it around and look for it. That means they have no choice but to walk on 2 feet. They can't even, you know, it'd be like us trying to walk. We're obligate bipedal. It's real hard to walk on fours. And we can do it, especially as a baby, we do pretty well. But when I say, not on knees though, it would be your feet and your hands, or your knuckles at least. And it's pretty hard to do. But now they found a lot of more fossils of Australopithecines and footprints in volcanic ash. And we'll see pictures of those later. And you can see that the foot was had a high arch. The toes lined up perfectly like ours. But there might even have been bunions like ours. one of the problems we have with walking upright is this bunion thing. But there's no doubt about it. The only doubt now is was Australopithecine facultative or obligate bipedal? Facultative meaning it had a choice. It could occasionally walk on all fours. And some of them at least were obligate, just like us. So that was 4 to 5 million years ago.
So there was a mixture of obligatory versus...
Yeah. Yeah, there's found so many different species of these Australopithecines that there's a mixed, and some, they all are bipedal, no doubt about it. We've even found a species or two prior to Australopithecine. It's called Ardipithecus, also bipedal. So it has been around. Now, in fact, it's throwing a little problem into the idea. They say we came from chimps, right? We separated from chimps 6 to 7 million years ago on the evolutionary tree. Well, that indicates that our ancestor, if you're going along with that, were quadrupedal, that is, that they were knuckle walkers. And then they split, one line became the chimps and gorillas, and the other became bipedal. But now it looks more like the bipedalism was there first, and chimps, from an evolutionary viewpoint, and the gorillas and the knuckle walkers came out of that and changed into from four-legged to knuckle walking. So that's the latest. Well, here's the thing. The whole field, if you read Fuzz's book, by the way, I forgot to mention this. This is a Reasons to Believe book on hominids. Who was Adam? And it was put out in 2005, renewed in 2015, updated, added another 100 and something pages. And it's really up to date on all this. So, yeah, Reason's made a few little errors based on the scientific data that was available back in 2005. And they admit it in here, but they readjusted their model. So I strongly recommend you get this if you got any interest in these hominids. And that's the newer one from 2015. I'm sure Colleen has a few over there.
I got one for you. How about this one? Lepidoptera alani.
I think that's an extinct species there, Steve.
What was it?
Butterfly.
Yeah? Lepidoptera alani.
It sounds like a butterfly.
Which Australopithecine scene is now considered a descendant of the humans? I know it's been at some point it's been Africana.
You mean an ancestor?
Yeah.
We'll get to that, John. Yeah. Yeah, you're jumping too far ahead of me, okay? So let me work into that. This just shows another feature, the palate, the upper palate. The one thing the Australopithecines has, their upper palate look like the lower drawing on here, the lower picture, which is very ape-like. U-shaped palate, the back teeth, rows of back teeth are pretty straight, whereas for humans and the Homo line, you got a parabolic shape, the upper drawing, the upper palate. So that's one of the giveaways if you can tell the difference between Australopithecines and Homo. Just look at those teeth. Okay, where are we finding all these things? Mostly Africa. Some surprises lately, though. Finding them in Georgia, country of Georgia, and a few other places. These are the oldest ones, the Australopithecines. So you can see there... The Rift Valley is very famous. Most of you have heard of that. Or Olduvai Gorge, Laetoli, and these other ones. South Africa's really in the news now, unexpectedly, finding all kinds of fossil hominids there. Yo. These oldest ones, the Australopithecines, and by the way, here's an even older one. It's called Ardipithecus ramidus. It goes back to almost 5 million years. I'll talk about it in a second. But yeah, they're so far only Africa. The Homo lines we're going to find in Asia, Western Asia, that is, and Europe. Now, there's some recent news about a primitive Homo being found in North America a few weeks ago. It was in the news. But. There's a lot of them. All right, here's one.
He's a good friend of yours, right?
Here's a surprise. Ardipithecus, they had to make a new genus, a new genera, for something they found even older than the Australopithecines, almost back to 5 million years, maybe 5.5. Ramidus means the root of hominids. Tim White found it. He's a famous paleoanthropologist. Found Lucy. Females about 4 feet tall, 110 pounds. Apes and Australopithecus features. Well, you can tell just by looking at it. Look at her feet. Look at the big toe. You know how our big toe lines up so we can walk real well and run? Well, this still had some very ape-like features. But it also had some advanced features. For one thing, it's bipedal. It walks on two legs.
So they have the feet, bones.
Yes, they have the bones from this. Now, the newer fossils. this is where they get in trouble. They believe it's near the divergent date of chimps and hominids. Remember what I said a minute ago? They used to say that we split from the chimps and the apes 6-7 million years ago, but now it looks like the line was already bipedal. Then off of that that split came the apes, which were quadrupedal. So it's kind of a, you know, that's a one of the problems the evolutionists are having. Just one of them.
Reverse evolution, because obviously apes,
yeah,
having their hands free, can do less.
Yeah, devolutioner. Small canine teeth, like, you know, more like hominids rather than apes. But thin enamel, that's another feature. Apes have very thin enamel on their teeth. So it's got features of both, but it nevertheless, it's throwing the whole thing up. Okay, and the foramen magnum is placed where you can tell that it was bipedal. Now we found some even older that appear to be bipedal. I'll just go through these real quick. 6 million years ago, 20 fossils found. There they are. That's all we have of this Auroran tuginensis. And appears more Homo than Australopithecine, although we don't have a skull. The teeth, few teeth with thick enamel. That's Homo-like. Femur bone shape and muscle attachment scars suggest bipedalism. So the legs are like a bipedal primate rather than a quadrupedal ape. You can tell by the head of the femur, you know, your leg bone right here, and I don't have any, unfortunately, other than right here. And the hip, where the bone comes off of our hips, it kind of flares upward first and then comes down. On the apes, it goes down and then down. So that's how they can tell this was probably bipedal. But this thing's 6 million years old. Well, that throws the whole theory off. We were supposed to have split from chimpanzees 6 million years ago. This thing was already bipedal. And here's one that's even older. Sahelanthropus chadensis. And from Chad, Africa. Here's what it might have looked like. Possibly oldest hominid, 6 to 7 million years old. Foramen magnum forward, possibly bipedal again. The face is flat, not ape-like at all. It's actually more flat than that to the Neanderthal, which came around much, much later. If it's a hominid, it throws off the family tree completely. John?
What about, my pronunciation would be off, RTD got this up several years ago.
Tome man. Yeah.
He's about 7 million, and quite possibly bipedal.
You know, it's not entering my brain right now, John. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite good. I remember the name, but yeah. Can't quite remember that one. Anybody remember anything about Tome man? Tome.
It's no. T-O-U-M-A-N.
Yeah, I think it is. Or Tome, M-A-I, maybe.
Back to Ross Hogan's question, RTB's model is that the reason God created all these animals in Africa was to teach the older and the larger mammals there to be afraid of humans.
Yeah.
And his evidence for that is that you know, when humans entered Asia, North, South America, they wiped out all the large mammals because they mm-hmm. were not used to being hunted by bipedal primates. That's kind of an RTB model. So just by that model, we would expect not to see other continents for that very reason.
Right. And even more pronounced than that was Australia. When humanity got there 40, 50,000 years ago, they wiped out about 80% of the megafauna. There were lots of things exterminated. Huge marsupials, birds, those flightless birds, gigantic ones.
Ostriches?
Much bigger. Species of birds. Well, that's one of what Dave's saying is that's one of RTB's theory, and that was going to be one of my questions to you all. Why did God make these hominids? I mean, it sure makes the evolutionists look like they're accurate, like one evolved from another to another to another. Except when you really look at it, you're seeing it scattering all over the place. But in any case, why did God make them? Anybody? We got one reason. Yes, Ross.
I just think there's only so many body plans that you can make that work from an engineering standpoint, and I just think God had fun making it.
I like that last one.
I don't see the issue, because when you really look into it,
dates don't match, the locations don't match. You know, several different that look like different species. They could really be all one species.
Yes.
It only looks like it follows evolution if you already believe in evolution.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're right. Nevertheless, they were made, weren't they? And you're right. There's another question, Ross, that you just brought up, and that is, are these really different species? I mean, there were hominids. There's no doubt about it. But are they oversplitting them and making too many species out of them? Or, you know, that's one issue. The other is, back to the original question, why did God do it? I mean, was it like, what did Darwin supposedly say about beetles? God loved beetles. He said it in a more eloquent way. Well, some people say Darwin never said that. It was Haldane who said it. But it's very likely Darwin said it because there's 30, 40,000 species of beetles. Well, let's say there's 20 species of hominids. So God likes to make things. He's very creative. And that could be another reason. The RTB model is that it got the African animals used to humans that were coming down the road, us, the mighty hunters who would exterminate a lot of them. And the evidence is that when we entered North America, South America, Australia, we did exterminate 80, 90% of the megafauna. So that's RTB's theory as to why God made them. Interesting. So if you think of any other good reasons, let me know. Yeah, question?
For those who support evolution, how do they respond to all these new discoveries, kind of throwing off the...
They will take them and simply build a tree out of it, you know, draw a tree and show that one's related to the other. They will basically disregard the details. You know, they don't want to get to... They'll say this detail that you found this new fossil that extremely primitive called Homo naledi, and we're going to talk about that later, but it was alive just 200,000 years ago. That's just a fluke. So whenever there's a problem, they'll say it's a fluke, it's an anomaly. So that's how they try to avoid it. Okay, here's one going back forward in time a little, Australopithecus animensis. 4.2 million years ago, Mauve Leakey. You've all heard of the Leakeys, probably. Richard Leakey, the most famous one. Kenya. Teeth less ape-like with thick enamel, but with large canines like an ape. So the thick enamel's like a homo, large canines like an ape. You keep finding these new discoveries, and there are mixes of things. Yes? Who would like to answer that?
They were hungry.
Right. Remember what we learned about the large mammals, the soulish animals, and the birds? They're naturally friendly towards us. We were hungry, like Jim said, and we just immediately killed them. And so, pardon me? Yes, but they did not have the hunting skills we do. They, at best, for the most part, they were like omnivorous. You know, opportunists. They would eat what was available, mostly herbs, plants. If they found a dead animal, yeah, they would eat the meat. Could they hunt them? Not till much later were any had the ability to hunt.
Low-tech.
Yeah, and it was low-tech hunting. They, for instance, what were humans? What's some of our famous older weapons? Bow and arrow, throwing a spear, throwing rocks with slingshot. Neanderthal didn't do any of that. That was supposedly our cousin. And Homo erectus, very unlikely they threw spears, or certainly didn't have bows and arrows. So when humans came along, the ability to hunt improved exponentially. And so we could wipe out, we had the ability at that point to exterminate species.
Many years ago, was that just before us?
Soulless animals would be animals like most mammals, or all mammals, birds, a few reptiles. They were around long before human.
Yeah.
Now, this is the old Earth view, you know, that animals have been here all along, and so people and these hominids came along much later. And RTB would say all these hominids are just soulish animals. Yeah, they're soulish animals. They weren't spiritual. We find no evidence, or tiny, tiny bits. And so anyway, here's a 4.2 million-year-old Australopithecus, bipedal. And here's Afarensis. Or this is Lucy. How many of you have heard of Lucy? Okay. Tim White, and I forget the other guys, but David Johansson, 1974, found this fossil. And Valerie held it up all ago. I actually have one of them. Oh, this is Afarensis. That's Africanus. We'll get back to that in a second. But this was thought to be right in line with the Homo line, and then humans. Yes, Valerie.
It's named Lucy because Lucy with the in the sky with diamonds was playing at the time they found it.
All right, it depends how old you are. You guys probably don't even know what she's talking about. It's yeah, it was a Beatles song, you know. Back in the early 70s. Remember the period of drugs and LSD and all that? And that the Beatles wrote a song called Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds because they were taking LSD and seeing, you know, stars everywhere. And so that song, the guys were playing it while they were out in the fields in Africa searching for fossils. And that's when they found Lucy. So they named her after the song, after the individual in the song. I don't know what the name of the song was.
Lucy in the Sky,
Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Okay. Of course. So that's how she got her name, although I'll be right with you, John. There's evidence now that this whole line, she may be a he of another species. And so that it's thrown off the Australopithecus afarensis taxonomy completely. Yeah, John?
Well, it was interesting. I found out the original inspiration for that Beatles song was a child who had drawn.
Yes.
Which showed little, the eyes were kind of like a kaleidoscope.
Okay.
And the audience is attributed that as an abbreviation.
Okay. Well, that's a good one.
How much of that picture up there is actually what they found and how much of it is an artist's?
Okay, good point. When you look at one of these fossils, say like this one, the blackened part on the is what was not found. That's where they estimated what it would be, and so they filled that in. And you can see on this one most of the face. Now, a lot of times you can do it in a good way, because if you have one side, you can, you know, make the opposite side. You know, it's like the mirror image. In this case, the face, it took a lot of liberties for the nasal fossa, trying to figure out what it looked like. That's what it means when you see that dark parts in there, on one of these replicas.
So is the rest of the body found, or are they just presuming what the rest of the body looked like?
It varies a lot with this one, Africana, or Afarensis. When they found Lucy, they found about 40% of her body, part, and they were able to like mirror image and make a lot of the rest of it. So they probably got about 80% from that. But now, since then, they found 30 more fossils, individuals, and they have it down pretty well. And so the newer stuff they found is what's throwing it off. Instead of this being her being an afarensis, they think she may be a male of another unknown species now, because they're finding more individuals, more species. Could there have been 50 or 100 species of hominids around at the same time? Hard to believe, but
maybe she was the first transgender.
All right, John. Could be. Yeah.
You're right, God loves to make things.
He does. Yes.
Why would it be hard to believe that? There was a lot of different
species that would.
I didn't say it was hard to believe. I said, could there be 40 or 50 species of them around at the same time? If there were that many, if there's that many beetles around right now, 40,000, yeah, I guess there could be. So, yes?
I heard, what are soulish animals?
Soulish animal, okay. The RTB's viewpoint is that there's three levels. There's the non-soulish, soulish, and then spiritual. We are the only animal that is spiritual. God made us specially that way. But all the animals that can relate to us real well, almost all mammals and birds.
All mammals, all birds, some higher reptiles.
The crocodilians, yeah, which are somewhat tameable.
And our tortoise.
Yeah, and I have a desert tortoise that's super friendly. So it's kind of like what a soulish thing is, how friendly it can become and relate to you. And most reptiles can't do that. Or insects, no. You can teach them to come to you when you feed them something. But that even a flatworm can learn that. And bacteria can even learn. But this is where they actually want to please you to some degree. And you can make pets out of them. And or working animals, and those are the soulish animals. Yeah.
With all these variations, maybe it's like trial and error, or just kind of testing out different DNA patterns, just tweaking things constantly mm-hmm. to see what happens if you do this, what happens if you do that.
Do you think God needs trial and error?
I think it could be true. Certainly.
He might. He's a very creative God, isn't he? And it's not fun to be creative, maybe, if you don't get some trial and error, too.
After the flood, he decided that, you know, maybe humans shouldn't be living quite so long because it created a problem.
Yes. Good point. Okay, so let's move onward here.
I'd have to interject on that, though. God knowing the future, there is no such thing as trial and error.
Yeah, I think we're getting into a paradox. So it can be, but it can't be, you know, and like many other paradoxes that we Christians face. Yeah, Jim.
He made him that way so that we would have to figure it out.
Oh, that's good. No, Jim made a good point. A lot of what God does is to keep us impressed by his work, but to keep us busy. He knows it's good for us to keep doing things and to be involved.
And it's a good topic for Sunday school.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, and the Lucy, you can see the palate, the upper palate, the teeth pattern. It's still ape-like. Slightly parabolic. Oh, there's those footprints. The place called Laetoli. 30 miles south of the Olduvai Gorge in North Tanzania, investigated in the 30s by Lewis and Mary Leakey. So they didn't know what to do with it, but now they've really studied these recently. Three individuals walking through a volcanic tuft left these, and then, you know, some water got on it and it hardened. And the footprints are just like ours. It's hard to tell the difference. And yet these are 3.5 million year old. So they were Australopithecine. They think afarensis, like Lucy. Narrow arch, big toe, aligned with other toes, bipedalism, possibly obligate. That breaks the rules. Australopithecines were not supposed to be obligate. They were supposed to be facultative, bipedal. Two individuals, 4'1" and 4'9". Oops, let me go back. Oh, we'll go forward. Here's a little bit, just to give you a quick glimpse of some information on bipedalism. You see a Lucy there, and a human skeleton on the left. And, oh, by the way, Mark, you were asking about Lucy's skeleton. There it is, the partial one. So we had enough information from Lucy's skeleton. Oops. Right here, this is Lucy's skeleton. And you see, we had part of the pelvis. That helps a lot. And not a whole lot of the skull, but enough to tell that she was bipedal. But now we think she's obligate bipedal, which is from the newer fossils they've found. There wasn't enough here to tell for sure. And that's about how big she was compared to a human. And then over here we have Lucy fleshed in partially. And you can see her pelvis is... And when I finish this talk, I'm going to bring some pelvi with me, several pelvises. And we'll see their pelvis, her pelvis was very much like a human pelvis, like this. Kind of, you know, our pelvis, just if you can remember what the anatomy was, the human pelvis is not straight like a dog's or a cow's. It's bent. It flares out. It's kind of sideways like that, the upper part. And then the leg bones attach. Well, that's a sure sign of bipedalism. And so she had that. And then I think that's supposed to be her running there. This is, would be the chimp. You can see this long, narrow pelvis. It does not flare out or bend sideways. And... So Lucy had some ability to run. Yeah, question.
How do we know Lucy wasn't a child? Like, did it say she was an adult?
You can tell by looking at especially the skull and the hip bones. There, on a child, there's a lot of cartilage left between the joints. You know, their skull is made of several bones, and you can find the cartilage in there. And the cartilage doesn't fossilize, it decays away, but you can see the openings where the cartilage was. And so as the individual gets, you have to be over about 25 years old before all your your bones are fused. And it's on these legs, humerus, there's a lot of cartilage, and you can tell the age of a person that way. You can also tell by the teeth. Other question? Okay.
How would you talk a little bit about how you can tell when you're 25 and what?
Oh. Okay, my slideshow has stopped going for some reason. 1 second, Jackie, I'll be right with you. Here we go. Okay, Africanas. Yes. What I was saying, Jackie, was that a younger person will have between the joints, your bone joints, there's cartilage. And the younger you are, the more cartilage there is. And as you age, there's less cartilage, and the bones are, especially in your skull, they literally, the bones fuse together. So it's good to get rid of the cartilage, you know. As you're,
it fuses and
then
it's a bone?
Yeah, the cartilage goes away, and then the bones fuse together in your skull. And like this guy here. This is, you know, a real human skull. You can see the frontal bone here. Let me get in the middle here. And the parietal and the occipital bone. See where they come together? See those joints? Well, a young child, those are actually open with cartilage, maybe a quarter to a half inch thick. And it's good for a young child because they're going to fall a lot, you know, and hurt themselves. And for birth, that skull needs to, like, distort. And so this thing could never distort, and whereas the baby skull can. And when they fall, you know, you'll see that their head gets misshapen if they took a hard fall. But within a few days, it usually bounces back, and the skull looks normal again. But if you feel a baby's head up here, you know, there's that soft spot. So that's what it is, Jackie. See right here? So this would be a big opening on a baby full of cartilage. And so it's all fused together on this. This individual is probably about 35 years old. Now, what I want to do is stop. Let's finish Africanas. And then I want you to come up and look at some of these. So you can gather around and give me a few more minutes. We'll finish Africanas. And that's the skull Valerie held up a minute ago. This one. And they used to think Afarensis, Australopithecus Afarensis, evolved into Africanus. This one was a little bigger and sleeker, but now what they're saying is, no, this thing evolved later. It was a side shoot, and it evolved into the Paranthropus, another genus of robust hominids that were big. They had these projections on their skulls and had huge jaws that were probably for cracking nuts and things. So it's out of the evolution line now. Yeah.
But that's how the evolutionists.
That's how the evolutionists view it, and
not
RTV. No. Well, the RTV does agree that it's not in the evolutionary line, from the evolutionist viewpoint. Unclear relation to other hominids confuses the phylogeny. That's on your list, by the way. 2 to 3.7 million years ago. Larger brain than Afarensis. It went up from 430 to 460 cc's, cubic centimeters. Anybody know what the size of our brain is on average? About 1,300, 1,400. Close.
Ranges, though, from the
oh, it's a huge range in humans.
To yeah.
Well, a woman's brain can be 900 or so up to 1,200. A man's can be about 1,000 up to 1,500 or so. And so these are averages. Now, I told you earlier the Neanderthal had a bigger brain than us. Theirs averaged about 1,500. But it's different. It's back here in the back of the head. Their brain, they did not have the cerebral cortex, this large brain area up in here. Yes?
So if there were many different possibilities here, does that sort of confuse the order in which they came about as groups?
Yes.
Because you have a whole range in this room.
Yes.
Of head sizes and heights and bone and everything.
That handout I gave you, you notice it conveniently shows it's mostly from smallest brain up to larger brains. That's how the evolutionists will make their taxonomy trees, based on that. It's artificial. It doesn't really follow what we're finding out there in the field. And I told you a minute ago, we found the Naledi, Homo Naledi, and let's see if I can at least show it to you here. Here's another strange one that they found, Caenanthropus, the flat-faced man. Paranthropus. Here's the robust ones I mentioned a minute ago. Look at that skull, the top of the skull. It's got that nutshell crest. That's the one that cracked nuts with its jaws. And they think it came from that Africanus. This crest up here was for attaching huge muscles that came down through the zygomatic arches onto the lower jaw, you know, and you can imagine the power of that thing. Yes?
So what you're saying is that, like, you made several fish or beetles, that you made several different of these hominids.
Yes.
So at different times, not going up the evolutionary scale.
Yes. What we're saying is that apparently God enjoyed making hominids. So not as much as beetles, no.
Was there ever a Herodian Africanus?
All right, the robust Australopithecines had a small brain, 410 cc's. Evolutionists describe it as an evolutionary side branch. They all became extinct about 1.5 million years ago, the three species. Just a quick thing on tools. Since I have some up here, I want you to look at this real quick. On the right, left side of your screen, right here, you see the Olduvan tools. These are the most primitive. 350,000 years ago, that's the earliest ones or the oldest ones we find. They go back to 2 million years. And then a little more advanced is the Acheulean. And then the Meristian. Now, these dates are, they should be a lot older than that. This is kind of an old drawing. Then you get over here into humans. These are all Australopithecines and non-human species. Then you get to the humans here, and the tools start getting more, they're all stone tools, except for these two red ones, which are probably bone. These are all from Homo sapiens, us. And look how intricate they got. And I mean, to this point here where we actually make barbed points and burins, these are called, they're for sewing. You don't find any sewing implements for Neanderthal or any of the other. It's very likely they didn't even wear clothes. And yet Neanderthal lived in very cold conditions, but we can't find, you know, any, I mean, if they did put skins on, they would have long since decayed away. But we don't find the instruments to make holes in clothes or to do other little tricks like that. So we can't say that the Neanderthal wore clothes. Every picture you'll see in a book shows Neanderthal with, you know, a fur coat on and a bow and arrow and everything like that. So it's a lot of exaggeration. So that's just some of the tools we got up here. Here's another picture of the actual tools. On the left are the more primitive Oldowan tools, some of the more primitive Homos. None of the Australopithecines made tools that we can tell of. They didn't even take primitive rocks. Yeah, I can't take any more questions, guys. Out of time. So you see just next to that, the Acheulean, couple types, Meristian. That's what Neanderthals. And then on the far right, your far right would be human. Now there's the first supposedly most primitive human. It's called Homo habilis. And I'm going to stop there and let you come up and look at stuff for a few minutes. Where's Dave? Oh, okay. Yeah, turn the lights on. So any final thoughts or questions? And we'll finish this on another time. We'll get into the real humans. But up here, we have a lot of good stuff. Yeah, Ross?
What's your bottom line here, Mark? How does this affect the Christian faith and the evolutionary paradigm?
Well, for evolutionary paradigm, it's throwing a lot of confusion into the works. And, you know, we thought we had it down 10 years ago, pretty straight. It looked like each one evolved from the other, if you're an evolutionist. And now it's just a hodgepodge of different species coming in at different times. Primitive, advanced, all mixed up. And there's some order to it, but not enough. Now, in terms of God and our religion, I have to tell you what I agree with the RTB's stance, and that is that these are just, they're primates. They look kind of like us, but they're animals, nevertheless. They're not spiritual. We find no archaeological evidence of spirituality. There's some arguments about burial, ritualized burial for Neanderthal and maybe some others, but it's real scant. So that would be a more advanced cultural thing. Symbolism, which is humans have a lot of symbolism. Yeah, John?
The key thing to remember is that each of these hominid species, when they first enter the fossil record, in comparison to when they go extinct in the fossil record, they look the same. There's no development, like Homo erectus at 1.8 million looks the same as Homo erectus at 300,000.
Yeah. Good point.
No growth or development or change in their morphology. And so there's a big step function between all these different hominids. There's no one merging into another one. So that's
pretty much true. With Neanderthal, they split it up into three eras. And the evolutionists like to say there was some differences, morphological differences. But it's very debatable. And yes.
And with humans, is it true that there have been found like musical tools, instruments,
We're going to get into humans next time, and humans have something different than all the hominids, and it's called symbolism or culture. And some of the hominids have a real primitive type of culture, very primitive, very limited, but humans have a very advanced, sudden, advanced, big bang of culture, it's called, and symbolism. The things like musical instruments, that's really a form of symbolism. So is ritualized burial, weapons that are highly intricate, like bow and arrow, speech. Our speech is a form of symbolism. And we cannot find it in any evidence of it in these hominids.
So that's next time.
Yeah, we'll get into the humans next time. Yeah, one last question. Go ahead.
Speech as in communication? Like, so back the hominids, they would not communicate by any means?
They probably had means of communicating, just like animals do, and maybe more advanced than, say, a dog.
Right.
You know, or take a crow. It has, like, what? 50-something different sounds it makes, and they mean something to other crows, and but not like tens of thousands like we do. And then a dog may have 20 or 30, and these things had some kind of communications, but it, nothing written, no symbols, no drawings, nothing like that.
Would that be considered a speech as well?
Say again?
Like their simple communication would be their speech?
Speech would be a communication.
So would that mean that they are not soulless and spiritual?
Right. They're not. They're soulish, but not spiritual. They are soulish. Remember when I said soul? A soul would mean a personality.
Right.
Like a dog is a soulish animal. And most mammals and birds are that way. And so they were... most of them lived in family groups, and we see evidence that a lot of them allowed aging to occur. They helped the elderly to some degree, especially Neanderthal. So that's a pretty advanced thing. You know, most animals don't do that, and they lack symbolism in most cases. So next time I'll get into that.
Mark, this is final. I couldn't say anything. This picture shows to me that where the race started because he started to shave. That's it.
Could be. Could be. Yeah, Helen?
I like the cartoony theory that God created the hominids for the purpose of preparing the animals for humans, because humans would be so destructive and kill all the animals, and with the hominids, the animals could get used to...
That's what Dave kind of said earlier, too, and that's RTB's stance. RTB says that's one of the reasons God created the hominids, was to prepare the animals for our arrival. They would see... hominids that looked like us, they would learn to fear them to some degree. Yeah.
And I said to Jackie, I'm glad they went extinct.
Yeah. All right, let me say a quick prayer and then come on up and look at this stuff. Lord, we thank you for this time together and this amazing field and these amazing creatures that you've made and tantalize us with. And we just ask for help, Lord, and knowledge and wisdom on what they are and what to do with them in terms of your creation. And we ask you to bless these physical paleoanthropologists, Lord, to help them find the Lord Jesus. Be with us throughout the week. Be with our leader, Hugh Ross, wherever he is. Bring him back safely in Jesus' name. Amen.